It is a pleasure to be here this morning with you all and my wife Jennifer and my daughter Josie. We come over Friday evening, a short little drive from El Paso, Texas, where we're serving across the border in Ciudad Juarez. My wife and I have been married for almost 23 years now, been together since she was a freshman in high school. And so we're 26 years we've been together. We have two children, John, who is 21. He's living in Colorado, working full-time, and our daughter, Josephine, who just turned 17 yesterday. And so she's a junior in high school and looking to go into nursing, athletic trainer, something medical in the future. So we're in that time of looking at colleges and visiting colleges and thinking about how we're going to pay for college. So... but no, it's a fun time, and I grew up in a Roman Catholicism, grew up in a Catholic church. My family is almost to this day very devout Catholics, but through events in high school and meeting my wife, I began to see what the gospel was and who Jesus really was, and through that. I was a golf course superintendent for many years after we were married and moved to South Carolina from St. Louis, where we had grew up, and we were living in South Carolina, and we heard a couple talk about missions, and we were newlyweds, first year of marriage, second year of marriage, something like that, and we really felt like the Lord was calling us, but me being such a new Christian and us just getting started, and literally months later, a new baby was on the way. We put missions aside. 10 years down the road, we heard Dr. Tom Stewart with MTW talk about the street child ministry that MTW was involved with heavily at the time. And I'll let Jen kind of explain that Sunday morning.
I'm not going to stay up here the whole entire time. However, that Sunday morning, I usually was doing the nursery. He didn't know I was actually in the sanctuary listening to Dr. Stewart. And I didn't have any kids. I only had one baby, so I kind of snuck in the back and was listening to him. So on the way home, normally our two kids are like, oh, she's touching me. Oh, he's touching me. Stop it. You know, so that's your typical car ride home. And this Sunday was very quiet. And Jamie and I just looked at each other, and he said, what do you think about missions? Almost simultaneously as I did. Tom Stewart wasn't aware that we were actually married, so I spoke to him after church and got some more information. What would this look like if we were on the field? What does it really entail with working with street child ministry? And Jamie talked to Tom and another part of the church also until Tom called us back. And he told us a week later, when he called us back just to check in and see how we were feeling, if we were still feeling like this is where the Lord was leading us. He said, I did not put you two together until I looked at my notes. So it's just really neat to see how God really touched both of us at the same time, which is real exciting for both of us.
So... God really touched our hearts again and kind of raised the fire and passion for missions in our hearts again. And through high school, the events that I was talking about, we lost some very dear friends in a tragic accident. And we really thought, that wouldn't happen to us. You never think that's going to happen to us. You hear about other high schools or kids in other towns, but it's not going to happen here. And that really impacted our lives and really impacted my wife about sharing the gospel. She started going to children's camps and stuff in the summer, and it really raised a passion to share the gospel with others because we don't know when our time is up. And that just drove us into missions even more, to work with kids. We always had a passion to work with kids. I was already, before I met my wife, was involved with sports in high school. I was coaching and refereeing soccer and baseball and umpiring baseball, but I was coaching a lot with smaller kids, and I really enjoyed that. And God used that enjoyment to work and put that passion with kids in ministry. And we developed that as well. He continued to develop that by putting opportunities for us to work with youth groups and that in church during those 10 years in between the first time we thought about missions and then when we really felt the call. We ended up going through the process of MTW, and a year and a half later, we were on the field. We were in Acapulco, Mexico, working with a street child ministry there, and also an orphanage that they continue to support and send teams to in the summer. We still have a lot of friends there. We spent 3 years on the field in Mexico, our first term, and the Lord called us away from there. We could really see it towards the end of our 3 years that it wasn't going to be a long-term assignment. Although we felt going into it, we really had that idea, but the Lord didn't. And my daughter is type 1 diabetic, and she's very brittle, and at times very difficult to control. A lot of the times very difficult to control. Being on the field was very hard with that. And with that, we had a lot of people close to us, family and friends, that didn't feel like we were doing the right thing to even go into missions. But the Lord had really pressed on our hearts and gave us a sense of peace about going and taking our kids to a foreign land where we knew the healthcare wasn't as good. But He really put us to mind with our doctors in that. So we were able to serve, but it was still evident that she needed better care as she got older, and just being on the mission field was a lot of stress for her, which made it more complicated. So we started looking for other opportunities, maybe countries that had better health care or cities within Mexico. Monterrey, Guadalajara was cities that are very modern, have really good health care. But He opened the door for El Paso, and we ended up taking a year and a half off to raise support to go back onto the field, kind of what they call HMA. It just took a little bit longer as we come off the field in 2008. And if you all remember what 2008 was, that was not a good time to be raising support. One of the first things churches do when they have a budget crunch is they take away from missions. It's the first thing. I want to shake sometimes and go, it's the last thing. And hopefully in the sermon this morning, you'll see why it should be the last thing. But it took us a year and a half, almost 2 years, to get to El Paso. And we joined BEAM, Board of Evangelism, Mercy Ministry there, with the emphasis of Mercy Ministries, that we were going to train the churches and help the churches and support the churches in Mercy Ministry. One thing that we saw in MTW and many mission agencies will say they done it wrong was that they went and started the ministry themselves, hoping that they would connect it with the church or hoping the church would come alongside and take over the ministry. But that doesn't normally happen. That's rare. Normally what you need to do is come alongside the church and really evaluate what the resources they have, the gifts, and then teach them to evaluate the community. What are the needs? What do the people feel like the needs are? You know, really seeing what the true needs of the community and how they can work together to witness to the community, but also provide in loving care for the community. And so that's what we came along to do. As I said, I was a golf course superintendent. My wife worked as a manager at Walmart, but then she also was a care worker at a crisis children's center where the DSS would take kids when they would pull them out of bad situations, and it was an emergency shelter for kids. They were only supposed to be there a couple days until they found homes, but as you all know, a lot of times kids are there for a long time. And so she worked there at third shift, really up until my daughter was at the age of 2. She was diagnosed with diabetes, and she just had to be home with our daughter. But God used all that time and the time that we spent in Acapulco to really understand and see what the churches really need, not for us just to go down and start a street child ministry in Juarez, which was the intention, but to come alongside the church and just really support, encourage, and train the church in Mercy Ministry. So we started doing that. There was one particular church called Promesa de Vida, Promise of Life. They were about 100 members, 80 to 100 members and attendees on Sunday mornings. But they really felt a passion to do something for the community, but they didn't know how. The only way they knew of evangelism was going around knocking on doors, carrying tracts. And so we just come alongside them and started talking to them and just really just building relationship. And the first year, that's all it was just building a relationship up with them to build trust and really to understand and get to know the church so we could really evaluate the church well. And then the second year, we started working, and we started building a relationship. Right now, I'm Juarez Coordinator of Church Planning and Mercy Ministry, but when we first arrived on the field, it was all about Mercy Ministries. We did outreach events as well, evangelism outreach events. We worked with schools. We had a comedor with the school, but we also got our pastor going into the schools and able to work. And they actually have in Mexico, it's mandated for the schools to teach on ethics and religion. And they didn't have anybody to do that. So our pastor was able to go in and teach on ethics, morality, and religion in the church as a class. Yeah. And the comedor, we would do events. Dia del Niño is like a Mother's Day, except it's Children's Day in Latin America. So they don't have school. It's a day of parties for the kids. I think the kids here would love that. But it's a great opportunity and time that we can close the street in front of the church, and we just have a big party on the street, and it's a time to evangelize to the... But the meal program that we ran for about a year at Promesa really opened up a lot of doors. It was a temporary seed project, so we knew it wasn't going to be long-term unless resources come out of from Mexico that could sustain it. But it was just a short-term opportunity for us to share and get to know the families. Cleaning and painting houses in the community. Just all these little seed projects that were short-term projects just opened up doors and opened up opportunities. But it also, for the church, gave them the realization that they could do these things on their own, that they didn't need all these outside ministries or outside teams or anything to come in and do it. They had the resources. They were able to come and do it themselves. So it gave them a sense of pride and motivation to do this. Sense of love for their community. One thing we do rely on is medical teams. We don't have medical people in the churches, so we bring medical teams from MTW that are specialized, come down for a week. But they have been really, really successful in opening the door to the community and to have people come. And we've had comments in the church that, "You're the only church that we know that really loves a community." We've had comments such as that. You're the only church that really cares about the community. You're the only one that's actually doing something in the community other than just inviting us to come and listen. So it's been really neat to see the way the Lord's working, huh? Yeah. So we recently, just in February, 20th through the 27th, had a week-long clinic, and this was it. And now we're up to three ministries, three churches, which I'll get to in just a second, that we focused on with that medical team, split it up evenly, 2 days at each place. As we were doing this that first year, doing the seed projects and bringing teams down. The first year we weren't able to bring teams because of the violence. The second year we brought two teams, came. As the violence started tapering off after 2011, we were able to start reintroducing and bringing teams down and serving the community and during the summers and do some VBS and English camps. But something big in our ministry within MTW happened that really affected the ministry. And we look on it now that it wasn't a negative thing. At the time, any change feels really negative and really hard. But the director of Beam decided to leave. And at that time, Beam was, can look back and say, wasn't very effective. It was effective at first, but it had been there 20 years. They had one church on the Mexican side, which was Promesa de Vida, planted and established, self-sufficient. They had several other small church plants that were 10 to 15 years old, still struggling, still on U.S. funds. So the Mexican director over Mexico made a decision to just shut Beam down and go back to smaller individual teams and even shut just some ministries completely down. He actually made the decision to shut Juarez completely down and just let Promesa be by themselves and go on. And Jennifer and I really prayed about it. We had, our son was going to be a senior in high school. So he was asking us to move away our son's senior year, which he had just moved and been there 2 years and just made friends. He didn't want to leave. El Paso wasn't his favorite city, but he had friends and was not ready to leave. And we really felt a sense that God was had us there for a reason. He knew Beam was going to be dissolved. I mean, he knew in his providence that he was bringing us there to be amidst this turmoil again. So we really pressed and asked to stay at least another year to allow our son to finish school, allow us to finish some of the work and maybe taper it off. But within a month or two, Promesa came and said, we have a really strong heart and vision to plant churches. Can you help us do that? Are you leaving? I mean, they had all these questions. And we prayed and we said, you know, we're not leaving. And we really told MTW that we were ready to leave MTW to stay because we were convicted that strongly, because it was very evident that the Lord had something for us in Juarez. And Larry said, yeah, that's great. I'll let you stay. We need somebody there to do administration, shut things down. We had property and stuff there. So he really needed somebody on the ground for administration. Within 3 months, we came up with a strong vision for church planting, a strong vision for the future, a long-term vision for a church planting movement to start in Juarez within Promesa de Vida. And we came up with a plan for church planting, how they can be on partial support from the U.S., partial support from Mexico, and become self-sufficient within a short time, within 5 to 6 years. And we started planting churches. The very next spring, we started Torre Fuerte. We started working with leaders and next church planters. And the two on the left are the church planters that we started Mission Torre Fuerte, Strong Tower Mission. Fernando is the main church planter, and Amado is the one in the middle, and he's our assistant church planter. And the idea was that the assistant church planter would work with the church for 2 to 3 years and then go off and start his next church. We actually were ready to plant a church, and the Lord opened doors quicker than we thought. And Amado said he wasn't ready. The Lord opened up doors a lot quicker than we thought for a second church plant. And Amado said he wasn't ready. And the Lord raised up another leader, who I'll introduce in a minute, but in that time, we started doing summer projects, construction. We finished a church that Beam was supporting for many years. We finished that church that summer and then really focused on the church plant. An English camp, which is run like VBS, was the first summer at Torre Fuerte. And we saw over 100 kids come to Christ that summer. But what was interesting was my wife's mother's group, she had a focus that, you know, the moms were really would hang around the park. Not all of them would go home. They would hang around and watch what's going on. So we invited them to learn English. Jen would teach 40 minutes of English for 40, 45 minutes. And then the next 45 minutes to an hour, she would teach them a craft. And it was a craft that they could, like jewelry. Sometimes weeks later, we'd hear these women were making jewelry and selling it for extra salary, extra income. So Jen really started turning her wheels on trying to make crafts that they could use and not just be a pretty thing on the wall, but something that they could really do and use within the home. And it was effective. We had 40 plus women come to Christ over that summer, adults. And out of those 40, we got 5, which seems like a low number, but we got 5 to commit to weekly Sunday school, weekly Bible classes, Bible studies. And we started off that fall with Bible studies. And by the spring, we were up to 10 or 12 people. And then by the next summer, we was close to 16. So it was growing slowly. And then our next wave of teams came and we did VBS. And the same moms that were there the last year came and brought friends and brought more friends and more kids. And we were being overwhelmed. But it was very effective. By the middle of the summer, we had over 30 people in our church service. So we went from evening church service to a morning church service within 3 weeks of the second Bible studies, or VBS, starting the English camps. And we call them English camps, and we put an English emphasis, because if we do VBS, we have maybe 20 to 40 kids show up. We say English camp, and we're going to teach them English. We have 80 to 120. Sometimes we've had numbers to 160 kids in one evening, because the parents want them to learn English. Some kids want to learn English. Most of them just want to have fun. But it gives a motive for the parents to allow their kids to come. And they don't really learn something that they hold on to. 2 months after the camps are over, we see the kids in the street, and we talk to them, and they can remember, "Hi, how are you?" And that's it, besides their colors and numbers. But what we saw is at the end of the summer, not only did we have adults coming to church and wanting a church service in the morning, and we was close to 40 people by the end of the summer, but as I said, we'd see these kids out in the street. They knew who we were. They knew who the church was. They knew the members of the church. They would come up and, "Hey," you know, and the first couple years, I did a lot of the teaching of the older kids because they were hard to control, and they would call me professor. Profe. And, you know, I hear this across the street, and I'm like, "Where's this coming from? I hear these kids running." So in the same way, the pastor had the same, that was there full time, he had the same stories. These kids recognized who he was. He was the pastor of the church. And so the church looked at what they could do long term after these, continually doing after the English camps. Of course, they didn't have the energy to do nightly, continually. But they did do sports, volleyball and a little bit of soccer training and coaching, just kind of a kids club, Tuesday and Thursdays, after school, in the evenings, in the same park. So they continued working with these kids. And then, of course, they offered stuff for the moms. They did baking classes and just getting together on Saturday afternoons. They did more crafts. So they continued the work after the teams left, and that's what we are really seeing where the work pays off, is when the church really buys in and continues working and investing in the community and the kids. Their focus is kids. The parents and the families come when the kids are being cared for, watched after, and loved on. So when it got too cold in the winter, because it gets cold in Juarez, we had an 8-inch snow this past winter in Juarez. So they were trying to figure out, what can we do for the kids? Well, they've got some really talented musicians in Torre Fuerte, and they started doing guitar lessons, and then it became bass lessons and drum lessons. So they did music lessons, and at Christmas and New Year's, they would do concerts and have the parents come, and it was amazing. The church was full with parents to listen to their kids play the music that they were learning. They don't have music classes in the school, so they have to either take a paid lesson, which a lot of the parents can't afford, or they were coming to the church. And it gave us an opportunity to share the gospel. And, you know, there was people that responded to the gospel, but they wouldn't come into church right away. But even just this past Easter at baptisms, there was people that have finally accepted and became members of the church and were baptized after 3 years working with them. Because the church never gave up, constantly kept up the relationship with them and supporting them. And so we started with this small house, and now we're up to 60 people on Sunday morning. You imagine 60 people in that little garage. We've enclosed it and put a roof over it, but it's full. It's can't hardly fit anything in there. They're constantly trying to rearrange to add chairs. So last summer, last May, we bought this piece of property. If you can see the chalk line on the far right, that's the property line. In Mexico, it's zero lot lines. And the white chalk line is a building layout. It looks small, but once we get working, and that's something the summer teams did all summer, was work half a day in the morning, very hard, back-breaking work. We did use a backhoe to do the trenches, but we still had to expand areas because of the caliche. I don't know if y'all have caliche around here. It's like concrete, so we had to get below it. But we still had to, the big bases and the towers had to expand them. But through the summer, we advanced the work very rapidly. This was actually after the teams had left. We were able to get all the foundation in and started going up with the walls. So it's gone very quickly. We've kept two guys employed most of the winter, and we're going up. It's going to be a three-story building. It's going to be a community center where they do English classes. They've continue to do these music classes. The parking lot on to the right, until there's building there we can use for sports and games and all kinds of things. So it's, as you can see, that white, that green building that was behind it, it's a kindergarten through junior high, through ninth grade. So it's great opportunity. Yeah. 8 o'clock in the morning, there's tons of parents bringing their kids, walking in front of the church, asking, what is this? What is this? You know, we told the kids it was an indoor swimming pool for a long time. Because they were asking us every day, what is this? What is this? Alberca. Ah, see? Yeah, they were just excited. But they soon realized it wasn't a pool. But we've kept teams busy. We've had teams come not only the summer. We had RUF team from New Mexico State come and do some work. We had the medical team, of course, come. And we had another team work that wasn't during the summer. And this is... got a lot of pictures of the construction, because you can see it's going to be a really, really useful building. And the sanctuary is this triangle shaped building. And we're actually going to have a balcony about where I'm standing taking the picture, is going to be a balcony down looking into the sanctuary. That's kind of hold up right now with the engineering and that, and possibly funds. But it's been really neat. The church is already talking about when they can be involved in the next church plant. When can they start helping with the next church plant? And we've actually, they go out every 2 weeks. They have Sunday school every 2 weeks. And then the other week that they don't have Sunday school, they go out and canvass the neighborhood. They go and visit every other week. They take everybody that comes, and their Sunday school is after service. So they do their worship service, so everybody's here, and then they get everybody to go out in the community, and they break off in twos, threes, and fours. And people that aren't as are more timid and shy to talk to people on the street, they go with those that are very that do it very well, and they help them and train them and encourage them and push them and encourage them and really teach them. It's part of their discipleship to go out in the community and do things. So they have seen growth through that. It's the Lord has been blessing that, and so they've made it a commitment to continually to share the gospel in the community. the mother church is actually losing people because we're sending them out to plant new churches, and they're not growing as fast as we would like to see them. And one thing that they don't do as well as the new church plant is the sharing the gospel, the witnessing, going out and knocking on doors, doing the surveys. They do it a little bit, but they're not as involved. So we said, you know, this is something that the child can teach the parent. They can go and teach them and encourage them and do this. So we're starting to see that talk and planning of doing that. Financially, they'll probably be set once we get the building up. They're pouring all their funds into helping the construction. They've raised over $10,000 between the mother church and Torre Fuerte. They've raised almost, well, more than that, $12,000, because they just raised another $1,000 for construction supplies. They just bought 138-inch block and 906-inch block on Friday. So they're deeply invested. It's not just relying on us to do and bring the funds to the church. So out of our church planting network, Promesa de Vida is the mother church, and the leadership is a strong leadership. Out of when we arrived and started this church planting movement and vision, six out of the eight elders have graduated seminary there at San Pablo in Juarez. Now, it's not quite the level of seminary that Steve got at RTS, but it's a good solid seminary. So Fernando had already graduated, Amado had already graduated, and then our other church planner down here is Alcides and his family. This is an older picture. It lacks one child, Damian. But we started Iglesia del Sur in 2014 with the first. We used 3 of the 6 weeks of summer teams, and we split it in half, and we did 3 English camps in a row out in the park there. And from that, we had another 5 women for Bible study. And that turned into more and more and visiting families. We did the medical trip. The medical team came, and we did one Saturday, and we had 100 people show up and visit, see the doctor and dentist. And that gave us 100 names and addresses to go visit for the church planner. Alcides worked at Steren, which is like a Mexican Radio Shack electronic store in Mexico. And through that work, and then the following summer, we had 7 weeks straight. Last summer, we had 7 weeks straight of English camp in the community. And they were 10 or 12 people that were coming. No, it was more than that. It was about 20 people coming for Bible study on Sunday evenings. They had received membership. I think they had 6 members, somewhere 6 or 7 members, and committed to go from Bible study to a Sunday worship service and Sunday evenings. So this was the mother church and the church's first official worship service. This was this past Easter, and they received new members. There was, I think, 4 of these were for Torre Fuerte, because we had a combined service, and the rest of them were for the new church, Iglesia del Sur. And they, almost everyone standing up there, were baptized in the park for Sunday worship on morning. At that first worship service at Del Sur, we also had a mother and child that were baptized right there for the first worship service in the street. Josue Mayo is a Mexican national. He's a partner of MTW, kind of a Mexican missionary, as you would say. He's been working with MTW for 30 years now. And he said, this is the first time I've baptized anyone in the streets in his 30 years of pastoring. And it was a neat time and a special time and a really neat blessing. But they do community. This was actually Easter. After the service, we had meal. We had burritos. We had games, all kinds of games, and just fellowship. People were just circled around, just communing. And we had several visitors. It wasn't like half the people there were visitors. There was four or five families that had come and visited, but it was a great time and a really neat time for all three churches to come together and commune and be one body of Christ working. This is the first Sunday service that we had at Del Sur, which was just this past spring, just a few months ago. And I don't know if this looks like your church or not, but half of the seats are full at the very beginning, and by the end, I didn't take a picture, but it was full by the end of service. So it's typical. Start on time and half the seats, and then by the end, it's full. But it was a really great blessing to see this church grow and the way it's growing. And as you see, it's in a house. We start the church at a house. It's at the house of one of the elders from Promesa de Vida, and it's serving us well. But we hope to have a problem of not enough room in there soon. We don't know what we'll do after that, but we'll see. And the Lord is opening doors. We're talking about a new church plant in Juarez already for possibly next spring, if all goes well. And I just went to Mazatlan and Culiacan for a presbytery meeting in the Mexican Chihuahuan Presbytery. And on the way back, we visited an elder from Promesa de Vida that has recently moved about 6-8 months ago to Chihuahua. And we had talked about Chihuahua, us as a mission ministry, and you know, had it on the future about Chihuahua and possibly in a few years. And Danielle and Priscilla, he is not one of the graduates from seminary, but he was involved in some of our church planting in the early works and leading some of the Bible studies, and they led Bible studies at the church. And they are seeing the Lord open up doors to start a church there in Chihuahua. And they live in the north. They do live in a very, it's a upper middle class to lower upper class neighborhood area that they live. And the Lord is just confirming some things within them. And they started talking to us at Easter as they were visiting about, you know, if we would be behind them and would want to start a church. And so we've been in talks. And then there was a guy that was the head of the evangelism committee of the presbytery, and he talked with them. And it was just neat to see the doors starting to open and the light to be shine on Chihuahua. So I'm in the talks with the Mexican General Assembly about supporting this work. They've got a fund that we wouldn't have to raise any from the U.S. It would be totally funded from Mexico. So keep them in your prayers. Keep me and our leaders in prayer over this work. But we're excited the way the Lord has been moving the last several years in this work. We're in our third year of church planting. We have, this is the start of our fourth year, and we have two church plants on the way. Tuerto Fuerte should be a commissioned and established church by next summer. They could, by all accounts, they could do it by numbers and everything that's required by the presbytery, but we don't want to rush it. We know that if we go too fast, it could actually damage the ministry. So we want to take our time and make sure the leadership is there established. There's several key things that we want you to pray about. One is a discipleship program that we have implemented. It's called Vida en Vida, or Life on Life Discipleship. It's a ministry out of Perimeter Church in Atlanta. We're getting trained. They're using this all over. They have it in Brazil, Australia, Africa, but Cuba is using it. And I'm getting ready to go to Cuba in a couple weeks to kind of see how they're using all this material, and see the church there is exploding. But we have discipleship teams, and it's not just about meeting together and talking about what we're supposed to be doing. It's meeting together and studying the Bible and going out and implementing it, and the leader taking the disciples out in the community and sharing and teaching them, but also pushing them out of the nest, as you would say, and encouraging them to be engaged with the community. It's living life together. It's not just let's study and come together and talk about what we should do, but actually doing it. And I think that's sometimes we see a lack of in churches. We study and equip ourselves, but we don't engage like we should. And so we're really seeing the Lord bless that. The other is the coaching ministry. But it's also the relationships that all of our churches have together. And this coaching ministry is helping us get into deeply in each other's hearts. It's engaging with one another and ministering to one another at a very deep level. And that's something the coaching ministry that we've been involved with is teaching us to do. Will you come and help? I know you all are talking about coming, and consider coming and working with us. It's not all about the pick and the axe and digging in the dirt. It's really about building a relationship with our churches and being encouraged by our churches, but also encouraging our churches. I know all of our teams leave and they say they were encouraged and blessed more than what they blessed and encouraged. But we see both sides, and really we see the church there completely blessed and richly blessed by the teams, but also the teams come away blessed and encouraged. And we've seen it open up churches, and I guess they created ideas and came up with ideas, and the Lord really pressed on them to do more in their communities. And we've had several churches tell us that they were blessed, but they also started new ministries because of their time in Juarez, reaching, they thought were going to be Hispanics in English lessons in ESL, and it ended up being more to Koreans and I'm not sure the other Asian country, but they have like a Kia car group there in Mississippi, in Alabama, and there's another car plant that's foreign, and they've had more of them come than they have Hispanics come to their ESL classes. So you never know where the Lord's going to lead a ministry that you start that you think you have intended for one area, and he uses it to bless in others. So I encourage you to come, and encourage you to think about coming with us. Will you partner with us financially? There's a couple ways. One, we're looking and needing support ourselves. We need support. We're, hate to say this, but Obamacare has drastically increased our support account by the healthcare. Pre-Obamacare, it was 800 plus, 840 a month for our family insurance, and now it's 13 something. So $500 a month is strictly from healthcare. And we haven't had a chance the last couple years. We haven't focused on our support because we've been really focused on the church and getting them going. And the Lord has blessed us by gifts that have come in anonymously and through people that we really wasn't expecting. So he's really richly blessed us, but we're starting to really see that we need the support, and we're going to have to focus on that after this summer. The other is if you want to support a national pastor for a church plant. And for a church plant, it cost us about $40,000 over, I've got 3 years, but it's actually over 5 years because we declined them over the last 2 years to get them off of support. And that's actually supporting two guys over 5 years. Monthly wise, it comes out to about $800 a month over 3 years, and then decline from there. So we're asking churches and people to support a national pastor, $20 a month to whatever, $100, $300 a month. This is our breakdown for our personal support. We kind of have the Lord pressed on our hearts to set different partner levels and have a certain number of partners. And we're looking for a $300 a church, $100 a month, which we have churches from $100 up to whatever. We need two more partners at $100 and 4 or 5 more partners at $50 a month. So pray about that. And our ministry is called Ministerios Fronterizos. It's that's the network, church planning network, Border Ministries. And we actually have a nonprofit organization set up in Mexico. There's still a lot of red tape we're still doing to be able to receive funds, but it is up and functioning and has the property in that, so we're protected. We don't have it in a person's name, which sometimes in the past they did, but we're all legit and keeping and have the administration set up. So Jim, if you want to come on up. Appreciate your time. We have about 9 or 10 minutes. I'd love to answer any questions. I know. Go ahead. Yeah, normal missionaries do HMA every after their fourth year, so they do 4 years on and come off the field for a year. Living in El Paso, which once our daughters graduated, we'll move on into Juarez. We moved to El Paso because of the violence, which I will touch on. I know that's something that everybody has a question about. So we've talked to them, and they said so that's in a five-year period, 1 year off is 20%. So they said, if you divide your time up 20% to raise funds over a year span, that would be the same as taking an HMA. We see the need and haven't taken a year off because of our kids being in school, but and also just the demand of the ministry. We're the only missionary couple there as of right now. We have a new missionary couple coming to join us to take a huge load off of us. The summer teams, that's going to be their focus this June. The Craigs, Scott and Kathy Craig. So we see the need, and we were just told in MTW office, you need time away, especially my wife with a lot of the health complications she deals with. And so we'll look to do that, but we're kind of stuck for the summer. But yeah, it's 20% of the time. It's a lot of time, and it's really necessary. The traveling it takes and phone calls, and it takes a lot of work to raise support. It really does. And that's why they have them come off for a full year, just to focus on it. But the violence was really bad, and we won't try to sugarcoat it. It was the dangerous city in the world. 2011 was over 300 plus deaths, murders in Juarez. I'll have to say that, yeah, monthly. So that's 10 plus a day. And not every one of them was actually cartel. A lot of it was just copycat, and a lot of it was I could get away with it type people that were in other crime and that, but weren't really involved with the big cartels. But the majority of it was. And there was a lot of crime, robbery, and theft that was going on just because they knew that the police were overwhelmed. But now it's been under control. What happened was the Sinaloa Guzman's cartel did take over the local Juarez cartel. So it was a cartel war. It wasn't the police. The police were in the middle, and there was a lot of corruption in the police. But over that three-year period, the cartel won out, so things kind of went back to normal. They didn't want the violence. They don't want it to be violent, but it was necessary for their agenda, as you would say. But now things are kind of back to normal. There's still cartel activity, but there always was. People didn't think about it. There was teams coming. We never had any problem. And it really is safe. The government and the police are doing better. They've got rid of all the corruption. I'm not saying that there's no corruption now again, but we judge it, like we were saying last night, we judge it by the nightlife. When we first moved there, you could go and it was a normal city during the day. Of course, there was a lot of businesses had closed down because of the extortion and they couldn't afford it or whatever. Local businesses were really shut down. Factories were still going. They were taking steps, but within 2011, and then we heard the rumor that Sinaloa had won, and all the rumors on the street, we started seeing evidence of it. And one was people were coming back to the parks at night, staying with their kids and little kids out at night. stands, taco stands, corn, you know, whatever, all the vendors that would come around the parks, wherever the people were hanging out, were coming back. And now it's they have the nightlife back. And if the families feel comfortable out in the streets at night, we feel comfortable. Because honestly, Americans were not targeted. There was only one American killed the whole time in Juarez during all that time, and it was a mistaken identity with the consulate worker. They caught the guys, and they admit that it was a mistaken identity. She wasn't the one they were after. And they'll admit that they don't want to get the U.S. involved in at a higher... They really do. The U.S. is involved with intelligence, but if they were seeking and going after Americans, the Americans would be involved. And they don't want that. So... any questions?
The coaching ministry, is that the sports coaching?
No, it's actually ministry gospel coaching. You've heard of mentoring, like you have a mentor in whatever field, but in ministry you might have the pastor's ministry mentoring an elder. An elder is mentoring someone. Coaching is a little bit more... less of a need that they have to have the experience. You just have to be trained and know how to ask the right questions, heart questions. You know, how's your Bible time? How's your relationship? You know, just a lot of questions. And you don't have to be an expert to tell them what they need to do. You just need to learn how to steer them for self-discovery and allow them to talk. Most of the time, we know what we need to do. We just need to be coached and ministered to allow us to express and get there on our own. And that's much more effective. So we're using that in our ministries. We're using that in church planning instead of mentoring, more of a coaching. And it's hard to explain until you get into it a little bit more deeper, but that's what it is. And
so these church plans, you have a coaching ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and something we found in church planting, and even the Southwest Church Plant talks about this as well, the church planting network we have here in the Southwest that our presbytery uses, is that coaching is vital for church planting. And without coaching, the success rate of a church plant is around 30 to 35%. With coaching at least one time a month, that's just getting on a phone or Skype or one-on-one with a coach one time a month, it goes up to 70-some percent. And if it's on a weekly basis, it goes higher, like in the 80 percentile range. And I know Southwest Church Planting Network requires coaching with the church planter. And they've got a really good success rate in their church plants. So we're using it and are getting trained to be trainers so we can build up and equip other coaches. Not just us doing the coaching. So, eight years. It was 6 years old when we started church planting with 80 members. I had six elders and four. They were probably church plants. They're 6 years old from the time they were organized church. They had two church plants that was working. Josue Mayo and Beam had been Tierra Prometida, which is Promised Land, and I know in Gracia. There was Gracia y Paz was another church, but that wasn't part of this work. There was church plants, but this is the only. There were only a said church for. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been delegated to to the areas. David Diasso is an MTW missionary and lives in San Diego but works in Tijuana. So he's working with churches there, but there's, I think he's only working with one Presbyterian church, but he's got some other AG, Assembly of God churches he's working with and trying to reform them. But it's highly accepted once they really understand it. Once they get the teaching, it's very highly accepted. There's a lot of churches that are now seeing the teachings, the Reformed theology, and go, oh, yeah, that's it. That's what we're missing. So even within our presbytery is Chihuahua, Sonora, Culiacan, Mazatlan, down Durango. A lot of these churches come out of the PCUSA, but they're being exposed to Reformed theology through our seminaries, and they're Reformed now. Yeah, a lot more so. I mean, the Pentecostal church is growing huge. The two biggest churches, though, honestly, that are growing is the Mormon church and the Jehovah's Witness. They witness better than any churches out there. And they don't try to reach the middle and upper middle classes. They go for the poor and just pour money into the churches from the U.S. and evangelize and with their gospel. There's a spiritual war definitely going on, not just between those, but also just materialism. The church in Chihuahua, the evangelical churches that are growing the fastest are prosperity gospel churches because of the materialism. Even the people that don't have the money to really own the fancy things, they still dress extremely nice. It's about appearance. There's a need, great need. The biggest church in El Paso, definitely growing, that you hear about, is Abundant Living, and it's prosperity gospel.
And then at a higher level, I think of Richard Pratt's Third Millennium. Teaching resources. It just seems like there ought to be, a force multiplier of some sort that you can get out of that. And I just wonder if that goes on.
It does. We haven't linked up with, Casas Por Cristo in. They're a huge parachurch ministry that builds churches in El Paso, in Juarez. I've met the guys loosely, but I don't really. And I hear they connect with churches, but I don't know how tightly that is. Richard Pratt, I've talked with Richard several times, and we're putting in a plan to use their material because there's a lot of people and we're going to have a seminary in the church using Third Mill. For another option of going three nights a week to San Pablo that most people don't have the time to because they're working 60 hours a week and have family, and devote time to go, that's a strict, rigid schedule like their seminary, where this would be more flexible. Come 2 days a week, and if you can't make it, you can catch up on internet. And so it just makes sense for us to, because we're going to need to build leaders and equip leaders at a faster pace than what we're doing. So Third Mill is a very key ministry for us. But he's also in other parts of Mexico. Churches are using it as well. So yes and no. Time? All right. And we'll be around. We'd love to, between now and church, we'd love to talk with you and talk to my wife more about what she's doing. I left her out of the women's, her part in working with small group women's and mentoring and coaching the pastor's wives and that. So.